You're listening to Stateside. I'm April Baer. If your interaction with the Great Lakes is weekend getaways, beach or river walks, or maybe a day boating or fishing, it's hard to see how these beautiful, massive bodies of water are changing. The eyes can't necessarily tell whether they're cleaner or dirtier hourly or on a day-by-day basis. A new study out of Chicago shows the past few years of regulatory rollbacks within the Environmental Protection Agency have been death by a thousand cuts. Many small changes and polluters are taking a toll on our lakes. Nick Schreck is Associate Dean at Detroit Mercy Law School and an expert in environmental law, and he joins us now. Nick, welcome to Stateside.
Thank you for having me.
What did we learn in the study?
Well, basically, this was the Environmental Law and Policy Center out of Chicago. They looked at a lot of reports that are publicly available, but they're very dense and confusing and not easily understandable. So the great thing that ELPC did was they looked at a lot of information around fines, so the amount of money that EPA, the Environmental Protection Agency, is levying against polluters. They also looked at how much money industry is spending to rein in pollution or to add pollution control technology regarding water pollution in the Great Lakes. And they looked at just the level of violations as well that companies are self-reporting for their pollution into the Great Lakes. So the ELPC compiled all that information, put it in nice, very to easy understand charts and graphics, and basically told the story that we are seeing a decrease in enforcement for pollution in the Great Lakes. We're seeing a increase in the amount of abnormal pollution events that are being reported by industries. And overall, we're just seeing a threat to the water quality of our Great Lakes if these trends continue.
Who are the main polluters that we're talking about here? What kinds of products are involved?
Well, in general, these are larger industries. So around the Great Lakes, we have very big users of water, meaning they draw in a lot of water and discharge a lot of water. So think of things like cement factories, steel mills, automobile manufacturing, you know, large industries, coal-fired electrical power plants also intake and discharge a lot of water. So there's many different industries all around the region that use a lot of water, and they actually pollute a lot of water. The other key thing to think about is wastewater treatment plants. So water that is discharged from our large municipal treatment facilities, those are also regulated, as well as with something we call industrial pretreatment, which is where many of these industries actually treat some of their own pollution before it's discharged into the Great Lakes. So these are, you know, larger facilities, but of course we also have smaller facilities that would perhaps discharge certain types of pollution. All sorts of chemicals, you know, ammonia, chlorine, et cetera, are things that are regulated that we want to reduce that type of pollution from getting into the Great Lakes.
Well, is it a surprise to you to, when the data is consolidated, to find that overall regulation has been in a downswing?
Well, it's not surprising in that the trend that we've seen from the Trump administration is that they are looking at regulated industries in a different way. They're trying to be more quote unquote business friendly. But what we see from an environmental protection standpoint, that often means decreasing the amount of enforcement actions that are brought, decreasing the amount of investigations that are conducted by federal officials. And so overall, that means that there's a more lax regulatory environment. And that encourages, you know, perhaps bad actors to pollute more than they otherwise would if they were being closely watched by the federal government. Or I think what is more dangerous is that they're allowing levels of pollution to be released into the Great Lakes without then following up and asking, you know, what happened here? Was there some sort of an accident? Was there some sort of anomaly? And there's a lot of stuff that is just, you know, flying under the regulatory radar, which is leading to degradation of our Great Lakes. So not overall surprising from my perspective as someone who tracks this type of stuff, where we've seen this rhetoric and this language coming out of the Trump administration, that they're trying to be more friendly to industry, more friendly to business. And that has harmful environmental consequences if we're not seeing the level of enforcement from our Environmental Protection Agency and our state environmental agencies that we need to make sure that our waters are protected.
What do the higher levels of pollution mean in terms of the life of the Great Lakes? I'm asking about things that we might see every day, but also the less tangible results that wouldn't be obvious without deeper study.
Sure. So there's some things that, you know, we've all heard about the blooms in Lake Erie. That's a result of pollution coming off of farm fields, primarily agricultural pollution, things like phosphorus and nitrogen that are organic pollutants that feed algae. They're like fertilizer for that algae. It makes it grow. That's something that we can see very clearly. There's a lot of other chemicals that we can't see, and we don't necessarily know that a water is polluted just by looking at it. It may look perfectly clear, it may look crystal blue, but there's actually a lot of pollution that is within that water. And so these are things like the reason why we have fish advisories in the Great Lakes for Great Lakes fish is from mercury pollution, from the burning of coal, like coal-fired electrical power plants. And so you can't see that mercury. You couldn't actually see it there in the water or see the fish ingesting it, but then we can then still get that into our bodies by eating those fish. There are many other chemicals, things like fire retardants or PCBs, pharmaceuticals that get into our water either from discharge from a wastewater treatment plant or from what we call runoff, meaning when the rain or snow carries these pollutants directly into a river, lake, or stream. Those kinds of things, many of those types of chemicals we can't actually see. Some of them are even odorless, but they get in the water and over the long term can not only get into fish and aquatic life, but then they can get into our bodies as humans, either through drinking that water or through eating the fish, eating, whatever seafood we get out of the Great Lakes. So that's the concern that we have, is that there's a lot of these chemicals that they may not look funny or smell funny if you're walking along the beach, but they're there, they're present, and we need to regulate them and reduce the amount of those pollutants that get into the Great Lakes, or it can have negative health consequences for us down the line.
I have a question about that. Is it possible that lake levels might have anything to do with increased pollution? Maybe more runoff and the water that is entering the lakes lapping up materials that otherwise might have been on land?
So here's what we know. With increased precipitation, that means more runoff. So when we have more intense rain events, storm events in the summer, higher amounts of water over a shorter duration, that runoff picks up pollutants and makes its way into the Great Lakes. So certainly from that perspective, yes. High lake levels, the other thing we worry about is shoreline erosion. We have many contaminated sites on the shore around the Great Lakes where if that soil, that dirt, washes into the water because of high lake levels, it carries with it whatever pollutants are in that soil. So a dramatic example here would be on the Detroit River. We had this shoreline collapse at a facility that there was a lot of concern about contaminated soil right there along the Detroit River.
Right. It was a former uranium plant.
That's right. They were actually processing uranium rods there back in the 1950s. So there was a lot of concern about what that meant for water quality. So that's just one example. I mean, the Detroit River is at all-time highs, just like many of our other Great Lakes. And so the real risk is shoreline collapse or erosion, where you have contaminated soil, contaminated sediment that gets into the Great Lakes and can degrade water quality. Hmm.
The Great Lakes Restoration Initiative has been responsible for much cleaner water over the past decade. Do we know exactly how much has been lost from the Restoration Initiative just from this administration's enforcement or lack thereof of EPA rules?
So the Great Lakes Restoration Initiative is actually a program that started under the George W. Bush administration, but it was not funded, meaning that the program was created, but there was no appropriation from Congress back then. Then under the 8 years of the Obama administration, there was money that was appropriated each year to work on things like wetland rehabilitation or habitat rehabilitation around the Great Lakes, giving grants to local units of government to clean up their processes to decrease the amount of pollution. So all sorts of really important work. Under the first few years now of the Trump administration, there have been attempts by the Trump administration to zero out funding for the Great Lakes Restoration Initiative. Trump's very first budget, cut all the funding for the initiative. However, through bipartisan work in Congress, they were able to restore levels of funding to the initiative. So we're still seeing, I think it's around $200 million or so a year that's going into the Great Lakes Restoration Initiative over, I guess, the at least initial budget requests of the Trump administration where they were trying to cut that funding. So what we're also concerned about with these higher Great Lakes levels is, you know, a lot of this habitat restoration work that's been conducted may be impacted by bigger waves, bigger storm events. You know, if you're working on a coastal wetland area and that is now completely inundated by water, of course, that work will have to be completed again once the lake levels go back down to their normal averages.
If you're just joining us, we're speaking with Nick Schreck, an environmental law expert with Detroit Mercy Law School. And we're talking about the health of the Great Lakes with a reduction in oversight from the US EPA. We've heard within recent days that Enbridge Energy has applied with the state of Michigan to move forward with the Line 5 tunnel construction project under the Straits of Mackinac. What should we know about this turn of the screw with Enbridge?
Well, this is part of the ongoing process where Enbridge is seeking to build that tunnel to construct it under the Straits of Mackinac. And we should point out that there's ongoing litigation, both in terms of the agreement that Enbridge struck with the Snyder administration right at the end of that administration, and then also over whether the actual easement that gives the authority of Enbridge to run the existing pipeline along the lakebed there in the Straits of Mackinac, whether that is in fact legal. So there's ongoing litigation, but as part of that, the Michigan Court of Claims ruled that Enbridge could go forward in seeking permits to construct this tunnel in the Straits of Mackinac. And so what happened was just a couple weeks ago, Enbridge did submit their permit application to the Michigan Department of Environment, Great Lakes, and Energy just a couple weeks ago. And they also have to get a permit from the United States Army Corps of Engineers. That's the federal agency that has jurisdiction over construction projects in the Great Lakes. What's concerning to many environmental organizations, as well as local units of government up in the Straits area, as well as tribal governments, the concern is that we have this application that came in during a stay-home order in result of the COVID-19 pandemic, and there's real concerns about public access to these application documents, the ability of the public to be able to comment effectively on these permit applications from Enbridge. You know, you can't have a public meeting in the middle of a stay-at-home order for people to learn about this proposal and to provide meaningful public comment. So EGLE has said that they are working on opportunities for the public to be engaged in this process, but it's very concerning, again, both from environmental groups as well as from tribal governments and municipal governments, that they're concerned that they will not be able to have an active role in this permitting process because of the situation we have currently with COVID-19. You know, all of this permitting and all of this activity is going on at a time when the public really can't be engaged in this process in the way that they normally would. And that raises some concerns about, you know, what type of involvement, what type of impact can the public have in this regulatory process of which we are by law supposed to be a part.
Nick, have you been able to get any sense of whether the regulatory and economic chaos of the pandemic and the tremendous amount of energy that really everybody is spending just figuring out how to perform regular work, is that having any impact on how EPA is functioning right now?
Well, I think it has to be. I mean, you have many people that are working from home, working remotely. These are federal agency staff as well as state agency staff that may not have all access to all of the files that they would normally be able to review in their office. So there can be some delays. I think we're seeing some non-essential functions of our government that are slowing down as a result of the pandemic. And that's understandable. I think, you know, from my perspective, one thing that our government could look at is, you know, delaying some decisions on certain permit applications. I mean, Enbridge is one example. We want to certainly make sure that the existing pipelines on the Straits of Mackinac are as safe as they possibly can be. But on the other hand, like when we're looking at new construction and new big projects that are likely to have an environmental impact, I think there's a question of whether we need to do those right away or if we can wait until there's the opportunity for meaningful public comment and public engagement in that process. So, like everyone else struggling to work remotely and work from home, you know, me learning how to teach remotely and teach over a video conference with my students, we're seeing the same challenges at our state and federal agencies. And so there will be delays. And I think sometimes, you know, delays might be a good thing. Let's make sure we get these things right. Let's make sure we appropriately involve the public as the law requires, rather than, you know, rushing through things in the midst of all of the other challenges and frustrations and stress that we have related to COVID-19.
Yeah. Is there any way for Congress to step in on this one? You mentioned before that it was congressional action that really kept the Great Lakes, that kept the Great Lakes Restoration Initiative alive. Do you think that they're going to be able to step in this time?
So Congress has incredible power to, pass laws, to update laws in regards to protecting our environment. We're coming up now on the anniversary of the first Earth Day, the 50th anniversary. It's definitely an opportunity for Congress to look at our current regulations and our current environmental protections and see where they might be strengthened. One thing that I would suggest is that the Congress, when appropriating money for relief programs related to COVID-19, that Congress, think about the potential environmental impacts of that money. Basically, they can make some strings attach to that money. They could require, certain types of renewable energy development. They could require large industries like the airline industry or cruise line industries to adopt more environmentally friendly practices as a condition of receiving federal money. And the same thing is true right here in the Great Lakes region. We're going to have a lot of industries that are struggling that are going to need the support of us, the taxpayers, right? I mean, it's our money, and I think it's completely appropriate for Congress to put environmental conditions, meaning we expect this money to be spent in a sustainable and an environmentally friendly way, or you're not going to get it. I mean, I think that's certainly something that Congress can do and is well within their power. Bigger picture, and again, this kind of gets back to the whole Earth Day anniversary, looking at whether our Clean Water Act is actually getting at these types of non-point pollutants that we've talked about, or whether our Clean Water Act needs to be updated and refreshed in a way to make sure that we have clean water for fishing, boating, swimming, and drinking on into the future. And those are all very appropriate things for Congress to be working on. Promoting health, promoting environmental health is, I think, something we can focus on in light of this pandemic. We're only as healthy as our ecosystem is. And if we don't have clean air to breathe and clean water to drink, our immune systems can be weakened, and that can make us more susceptible to these types of diseases. So, it's a great opportunity, I think, for Congress to be looking at the holistic approach to environmental management and to our environmental regulations to make sure that we're, providing the best protections we can for our public.
Nick Schreck is an associate dean at Detroit Mercy Law School. Nick, thanks very much for being with us today.
Thank you for having me.